Be informed.
Be ready.
Pacific prepared.
You know, preparedness is the responsibility of everybody. Of course, state institutions have a particular role to play, and for instance, pre-positioning supplies before a disaster to make sure that you are not stuck waiting for supplies to come into Palau would be a key part of preparedness, or pre-positioning supplies closer to Palau already. And you know, generally know when it comes to a typhoon or a cyclone or a storm, what kind of supplies you're going to need, whether they're tents or in some cases it might be wash kits and so on, and some shelter items, etc. So these kinds of things you can do. Also, with respect to, you know, you mentioned training, one of the things I discussed with the NEC today is the importance of scenario planning. So, yes, we generally know how to deal with cyclones and typhoons now in the Pacific, because sadly we have too many of them. But we also need to think about disasters, not only just an impact of the disasters that we're used to dealing with, but also the potential for other types of disasters take place. I was very happy to hear, for instance, that the NEC had gone through an exercise recently where for several days they worked on a scenario of a plane crash in Palau. And they were explaining to me that through that exercise, that simulation, they came up with various challenges that they had not considered in the past. And so I, you know, pointed out that there are methodologies, in fact, I've offered as the UN to help to work with the NEC and NEMO and others to look at different types of disasters. I mean, the COVID-19 pandemic, for example, was one that you might say most of the world was unprepared to deal with. I gave them the example of you know, my home country, Sri Lanka, when the tsunami struck in 2004. We've never ever had a tsunami in recorded history in Sri Lanka. And so we really also now need to start thinking about different types of disasters and catastrophes and start preparing. So those are the kinds of things I think, you know, you could say we do primarily with government. But again, it's not only with government. I mean, there are civil society organizations, for instance, who have a particular role. That's why I mentioned it's important to have in that joint steering committee organizations that represent different constituents, people with disabilities. Across the board, around the world, often there were people who are quite literally most likely to be left behind in at times of disaster. And so there's specific areas or let's say specific measures that we can take to ensure that people with disabilities and people who care for those with disabilities are well prepared. Women, girls, children, the elderly. So different parts of civil society. And then there's the private sector. Quite importantly, in different parts of the world, we've seen that when it comes to logistics, for instance, sometimes the private sector, I'm not suggesting necessarily only in Palau, but sometimes in other places, if you want to get something from point A to point B, it could very well be a private sector entity that has the capability to move that very quickly. Not the UN and not the government, not the NGOs. For example, in Fiji, we had a case where during these cyclones and even during the pandemic, we had resorts who made their boats and their aircraft available to Fiji to transport various commodities and supplies to communities that were affected. So the private sector being engaged in those preparation exercises is quite important. And understanding, you know, who has what assets. So there's a mapping exercise that needs to take place. And then, as you rightly pointed out, the involvement of the community. Now, of course, whenever a disaster strikes, the first people to be able to help is the community that you live in. It's the neighbors, it's sometimes your family members, etc. And until assistance can come from wherever it eventually comes, it's those coping mechanisms that you have within the community that literally saves lives. So ensuring that communities, first of all, know how to mitigate the impact of future disasters. What I mentioned, for example, before about strapping a roof or ensuring that the livestock are in a place that's protected from the elements. Those kinds of simple things that communities can actually follow, making sure that people take early warning messages seriously, because there are too many people, unfortunately, still around the world, despite being warned, who, for whatever reason, choose not to take any action and ultimately end up paying a price, sometimes with their lives. So making sure that communities take early warning seriously is another part of it. And of course, you know, finally, you know, we also work with communities to train them. They could be the very first responders, as I said, you know, whether it's training in first aid or training in collecting data, very important, of course, when it comes to a disaster, that we're able to get information as soon as possible so we know how to get assistance and to whom we need to get assistance and what kind of assistance. And a lot of that comes from at a community level, and we need people who are trained to be able to collect that kind of data. So I've sort of given you a snapshot, but to answer your question in a very long-winded way, everybody has a role to play in preparing ourselves for disasters.